Why don't you just leave your bag up there?
Because I don't want to trip on it.
How are you going to trip on it? You're going to be sitting.
Yeah, you never know.
You're not going up to the podium. That'll be foolish.
2 seconds.
It's 10:30. All right, let's get started.
Wait, there's Julian.
Hello, PAX Unplugged. How is everybody doing? Welcome to Prime Time, Late Night Friday panel. And to our panel, the strange phenomenon of the board game movie. Today, we're talking about board game movies. Not as prevalent nor as notorious as the video game movie, but since we're at PAX Unplugged, this is far more relevant to our interests. Board game movies go back as far as the 1980s, and more are on their way, whether we like it or not. But what makes a board game movie work? How can it succeed where movies based on video games have failed time and time again? And what can we as board gamers look forward to seeing in the coming months and years? That's what we're here to talk with you about tonight. Okay, take the next slide.
Turn that off.
All right,
turn it off. I don't want you back.
There we go.
Hey everyone, first of all, we are Tuesday Night Gaming. Everyone
next on the panel?
Oh yeah. Hey, good call.
Alright.
Yeah, we are Tuesday Night Gaming. We are a podcast. If all the panelists will please introduce yourselves after me.
Mm-hmm.
First, I am Jay. I am the owner and creator of FeedYourNerd.com, as well as a webcomic artist of Panoramic and Enlightenment and Tales of the Dice. I play one turn in the Game of Life every year, and this is it.
So, alright. My name is Zach. I am the mastermind behind Tuesday Night Gaming and this panel, and I'm undefeated at Candyland.
My name is Lana. I'm also fully participatory in Tuesday Night Gaming, and I read summaries of all the movies on Wikipedia.
My name is Andrew. I'm a substitute member of Tuesday Night Gaming, but I had working VHS copies of most of these movies, so...
Right. All right. So if you want, you can always catch us on Tuesdays. We live stream based off of my Twitch stream, which is twitch.tv/mcslanty, where we play various video games, Overwatch, Minecraft.
Occasionally other stuff.
Yeah, we play whatever at the time we feel like. But yeah, so we play video games and we basically record this podcast at the same time. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify.
Yep.
That's basically it right now, right?
Right. The podcast is not family friendly, just so you know. And if you enjoy the banter on this panel, tune in. And finally, check out FeedYourNerd.com for other cool stuff. Yeah.
So we talk about games, movies, sci-fi, superhero stuff, whatever else is going on in our lives.
Yeah. All right. Next
slide. Okay. So these are the movies we're not covering, unfortunately, because I love game night, but it doesn't really fit the definition that we were going for. And we also didn't want to cover Ouija because it seemed really scary and we're wimps, and also it's not a game. And so also not Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, because that is a video game movie and not super close to the original.
So in brief, we're going to be covering four movies in this panel tonight. We're going to go over our observations as we rewatched these films. We suffered for you for this. We're going to discuss our expectations for some upcoming Hollywood board game movies. And then we're going to discuss some ideas we have for potential board game movies that we'd like to see to you, the producers in the audience.
Right. So, in case you're out there. Next slide.
We're going to start with a true classic, a movie that came out from before 2000.
Everyone's favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so Clue defines the board game movie genre. It came out of nowhere, it was an immediate classic, and incorporates board game elements into basically every aspect of the part of the movie. There you go. I'm pretty sure I don't have to explain the basic game mechanics. You go into rooms, You search, you talk to each other, you try to figure out who did it. These were the original cards that you had, so those were your player cards, and this is flickering like crazy. And then those were the various weapons and then the rooms that you could search in. So it's actually interesting. So the movie, or actually the game itself, was initially trademarked under Cluedo, which is Clue and Ludo, which is Land for I Play. It was granted in like 1947, but it wasn't officially launched until 1949. It was licensed by Parker Brothers, and but so this is one of the original movie posters. Such a great shot. And so these are basic cast and potential spoilers, people who die at the bottom.
So of course Tim Curry is well known now, and then this was an early role for Christopher Lloyd, of course, who gained infamy as Doc Brown in Back to the Future. But you see him as quite a different character here. If you don't remember this movie from your childhood, he's almost a sexual predator, Christopher Lloyd's character.
So it's actually interesting. So John Landis was originally supposed to be the director of this movie, but instead he decided to go to Spies Like Us, starring Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase.
Yeah, that great movie everyone loves and remembers.
It's a great movie, thank you very much. So the original premise behind the original script was a group of strangers come together because they're being blackmailed and they're stuck in a mansion and murders unfold. That was the basic premise and that was the original pitch. The screenwriter was Jonathan Lynn, who ended up directing when John Landis had to back out. Another interesting point about this is each character arrives in a car. And originally it was set in England. So everyone drove like these old fashioned English cars, big ass cars. And each color of their car correlates to the color that they are in the cast. So Mr. Green drives a green and so on and so forth.
So you'll notice they're not dressed according to their character here.
Yeah, it's either they dress in their colors or they dress in the contrast color. So it's unique in that capacity. Carrie Fisher was originally supposed to be Miss Scarlet.
That's her on the far right.
Left.
My
right.
Our left. Yeah,
their left.
Our left. Well, stage right. Still my left because I'm staring at the air. But unfortunately, she entered rehab right before they started rehearsals, so she had to back out. They had initially thought that she would be able to still do rehab or get out of rehab in time to film, but obviously that did not happen. Tim Curry, surprisingly, was their third choice. Originally, it was Leonard Rossiter, who unfortunately passed away while performing a play. And then it was supposed to go to Rowan Atkinson.
I can totally see that.
I could see it, but... and the singing telegram person was...
The part everyone remembers.
Yeah. Actually, Jane Whelan from The Go-Go's. It was her first movie appearance ever.
Very short.
Yes, very short-lived appearance. Okay, so why is this movie fantastic? First of all, it starts off with a dog poop joke, where he steps into dog poop, and the whole first 20 minutes of the film is him walking around next to people, and them all going, and like looking at their shoes and trying to figure out what's going on. They immediately drop it once everyone shows up, which I feel like was such a loss. They could have done so much more with that. You know, it could have helped with clues, it could have done a whole lot of other stuff. It was just an opportunity we lost, I thought. Let's see. The other things, just the wordplay and just their ideas behind what they did. I mean, this by itself is fantastic. He had threatened me in public, why would you want to kill in public? And you're like, no.
So, I think... What makes Clue really successful is that they embrace the ridiculousness of the fact that it's a movie based on a board game in a way that, as you will see, the other movies we are covering really did not. So that's the major lesson from Clue, I feel, is that if you're going to make a movie based on a board game, it should be funny.
Yeah, they definitely hammed it out. I mean, Colonel Plum says at one point, are you trying to make me stupid? And Tim Curry says, you don't need help from me, sir.
Ew.
I mean, that kind of thing. Or he was an illusionist, but he never reappeared. He wasn't very good at his job. I mean, just certain, and then all the physical gags. They just constantly ran into each other, fell down. They dropped each other. I mean, it was just so many good things.
So it ruined me role playing the game.
Even though they embraced how ridiculous it is, they did stay very true to their source material, though.
Oh, absolutely. So the director was very adamant that people stayed on script. They did not like anyone messing around or anything. The only person they let mess around was... Actually, let's go back a little. So Ms. Khan, who was a comedian, when she got this role. So they let her, at one point, she talks about her anger and her jealousy. And it's all about the flame, the fire, it burned, the flame. And it's all, and they were like, you know what, that's good. We'll keep that. But they did it like eight times, and eight times she changed it up, and each time it got better. So they just kept recording her as she kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And she was the only one that was allowed to improv during the whole entire film. Yeah, so basic board of the game.
One of my favorite parts was how they incorporated the secret passageways in the game into the movie, and how it was extremely plot relevant. Also, of course, the most useful part when you're actually playing the game to be able to kind of move around as well as you can.
I totally forgot that they were in the game before I saw the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other interesting thing is, so in the movie, they actually go into the attic, and they also go into the basement. So the stairwell is not used. It's actually where you end up putting your cards, right? To find out the final solution. The reason being because they don't find anything in the attic or the cellar. They're just there because there's a whole lot of physical comedy and randomness that happens. So they incorporate it into the game by putting it in the middle. And to give that little homage to the fact that they are actually part of that. So it's interesting that they have that in the game, and then they, like, we'll use it in some capacity. All right, so clue. So in the game, you try to predict, or you try to guess who did it, where, and with what. You're allowed to accuse people, and then you see if you're right or wrong. So there's multiple potential outcomes of the game, right? The reason why this movie did not do well is because everywhere they showed it, they showed a different ending.
Well, there were three endings.
Well, there was three endings. There was actually a fourth ending that they never actually showed. I could not find it for the life of me. But because of that, no one knew what the actual ending was, so everyone got pissed. And no one wanted to go see it because no one could actually talk about it. Because they'd be like, we saw this!
Well, I thought I saw, when I was reading about this on Wikipedia, that in the newspapers they would put like A, B, or C ending next to the movie listing so people would know. Right. Or you'd have to remember which one you saw the first time, if it was A, B, or C.
Like, how does that help you? If you see...
Because then you don't have to, then you won't go to the same theater,
yeah,
that theater that's showing
the same
ending.
But how are you going to know if it's ending A? It's not like there's a sign that says this is ending A.
That's why it's
so
good.
Just
like
sense.
The game. That's the complaint that everyone had.
I think a movie with multiple endings is a better idea in theory than in practice.
Exactly.
Turned out.
Exactly.
So you go to your local movie theater, you go to the manager, say, I think this is the one they did it, and then he'll tell you if you're right or wrong and if you won.
Yeah. Well, how much did we enjoy watching Bandersnatch from last year?
Right.
You know, Black Mirror Bandersnatch?
Yeah.
No, that's great. So it completely panned because no one understood what was going on. Everyone just assumed they watched this movie and that was the ending, and then someone would be like, I watched it, I got a totally different ending, and so they'd just be like, why are we even watching this then? I mean, there's no definitive answer, right? But that's basically how the game plays out. So
yeah.
You don't get it until the end, which is later on when they released it to the home edition, and you got all of the endings, and then it finally gave you those big snapshot. This is the actual result. So I thought that was hilarious, the fact that they came up with this brilliant idea, because it is actually a brilliant idea, right, to have multiple endings and to showcase it in different theaters. But at the same time, you have to give them a real ending. I mean, other movies have given you those times where you're like, okay, I can see this happening, and you're always not fully satisfied.
I mean, there aren't any children here, right? Well, so what if you had, what if you missed the ending that had the famous line, "I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife"? You really got the short end of the stick. Yeah, big time.
Communism was just a red herring. I'm not quite that.
Oh yeah,
that's right. I also really liked the scene in which everyone gets the different clue weapons, only because that makes you realize sort of how ridiculous they are, especially like the noose and the candlestick.
Like, I don't think a candlestick is just as dangerous or easy to use as a revolver.
Exactly, or a knife.
I don't know. I feel like those are pretty easy compared to a noose where you have to run off. I mean, times are changing and all.
Alright,
I don't think anyway.
That's a great adaptation of that movie.
I don't think we have to talk about that. But yeah.
Anything else on Clue?
Man, you already made me forget it.
Sorry.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Wait,
sure.
You said at the cons that it was like problematic, but what
yeah. That was basically all Christopher Lloyd's character. He, from the beginning to the end, is just constantly groping Miss Scarlet, and there's other kinds of just
and it's
really
like it's like supposed
comments.
To be funny.
Yeah, it's played off like it's totally normal.
Then there's also a part where Mr. Green is like, so the premise is they're being blackmailed. They're like, "Mr. Green, why are you being blackmailed?" He says, "Because I'm a homosexual." And then Christopher Lloyd is like, "Oh, get away from me, gross."
I mean, it was set in like the McCarthy era, so I don't know if they're trying to like.
It's supposed to be a joke, but it's just a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a classic movie. It's just you can tell it's from the 80s. So that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
like so Christopher Lloyd's character, he's Professor Plum, right? So he like gives Miss Scarlet a ride to the place in his car, and then as they're waiting to get in, he just like grabs her butt.
Yeah.
Just.
What?
And it's like a joke. It's like, ah, ha, ha. It's like, no, no, no.
Funny how we're more uptight now than we were in 1983.
Yeah.
And everything is a red herring, right?
Right.
Especially communism.
Especially
communism. That's sad.
Yeah.
All right.
Any other
all
questions?
All right. Next.
Next up, we have Jumanji, the classic Robin Williams movie about a magical board game that starts wreaking jungle-themed havoc throughout the real world. Monkeys get into kitchens, rhinos rampage, and a mad hunter stalks our players to the quiet town of Brantford, New Hampshire. There's even a weird time travel aspect where Robin Williams' character gets trapped in the game for 26 years, unable to escape until a young Kristen Dunst and her brother help him finish the game. And
do you just hate it when people like jump into a game already in progress and they want you to like explain their rules to them too? It's so annoying. That just happened to you guys. Okay, that's fine.
Almost as bad when someone really wants out of a board game and then they ask you to take their spot. Oh, we're only like 7 rounds into this game of diplomacy. Seriously, just take over for me. We're fine.
That's much better than them going, "I gotta go to the restroom." And then they just get up and leave. And they're like, sitting there for 10 minutes like, "Wow, that's a big poop."
I'm sure there's an annoying board game habits panel somewhere here this weekend. Check your schedules. But the movie, it's great. The visual effects hold up surprisingly well. Some of the monkeys can look a little bit creepy, but the other stuff is pretty stunning. We rented this from Amazon Video, and it told us it's a mysterious game that transports players with thrilling effects.
Thrilling effects.
That's their number one sell, not board game, whatever. It's still pretty good. It's pretty good overall, family fun adventure. There's maybe a bit more child endangerment than they might get away with these days, but it's pretty good. But there's some drawbacks to it from a board gamer perspective, and I think it's best summed up by Kristen Dunst's character when she said, "The game of Jumanji is no skill involved."
That's an actual quote.
Jumanji is a roll and move game. They roll the dice, and if they can get to the middle, they win. That's great. But if they don't, then literally just terrible things happen to them, and they're stuck playing. They just keep rolling dice, and it keeps getting worse and worse. And The one redeeming aspect of it was probably the little tokens that they had. They were really nice wooden carved pieces, and when they rolled the dice, they moved by themselves. I'm waiting for our board game technology to catch up to like either that or like the Harry Potter chess pieces that would like move when you gave them all the orders.
You can do that with like magnets or something. Right?
That is true.
Life skills.
True. Life skills. It's almost a dexterity game, like a very extreme dexterity game.
That was more like an escape room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's not a board game movie, it's an escape room movie.
Yeah.
Before we got the escape room.
It also teaches you about, you know, upgrading constantly.
Upgrading?
Go from a gun, from the small gun to a bigger gun.
Oh, yeah.
We got into that.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of RNG. I don't think I would particularly enjoy playing it. And yeah, as we mentioned, there's a lot of scary stuff for the kids. Not a great roll and move game. Yeah, not one I would really recommend to people. There is a tie-in movie board game to this. We could go ahead a few slides.
Oh,
nope. That's not right. Go back. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, close enough.
No, two more. All right.
Oh, that's
it.
So this came out the same time the movie did. And over Thanksgiving, I dug into my sister's closet and I found our copy of it that still worked. And it is just as rough as the game portrayed in the movie. You roll the dice, you move the characters, and then you draw a card from a deck. And one of the cool visual effects that they had in the movie was that the words would like magically appear and tell a riddle, and then they would read it out loud, and that's what happened. And they recreated this using cutting-edge 90s technology of a clear piece of plastic and scrambled words, sort of like Decrypto. So you would slot that in and you'd read it to your friends. And then the friends actually were the ones who had to help you get past the challenge. They would roll a bunch of dice really fast. It was sort of like a precursor to like Escape, almost. Yeah. And if you failed enough of those, everybody would lose automatically.
It was hard work back then.
And so, but it was still like a pillar of like a terrible roll and move game. Because not only did you move really slowly, you could put a rhino in front of your opponents, and then they couldn't move until someone else rolled the rhino and moved it.
I think that's where Sellers of Catan got it from.
Yeah, probably.
No, I don't know.
Yeah. And they also, of course, had the famous rule of 5 or 8, the closer you got to the middle. Just like what happened for Robin Hood.
Yeah, I do appreciate the fact that they moved up to a D8 or 2D8.
Oh, as opposed to the D6 in the movie? Yeah.
You had to like...
4D8, jeez.
You had to like assemble those yourself, too.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah, really? It was rough.
Were they building
I
didn't
even
dice?
Know that.
Maybe they charge extra for that now.
That sucks.
They do, actually, you can buy this from your local Target now, even. I think they did a reprinting within the last decade. I walked by mine and saw it.
Oh.
Very cool.
You know what we're playing, right?
No. Wait, not again.
You know, my family got about 10 minutes into this, and then we all had to just stop and walk away. It's fine. I'm sure it was a lot of fun. Me and my sister, when we were like 6 or younger, playing with my grandmother, it was perfect. But hopefully, maybe the Jumanji 2 tie-in video game, maybe that'll be a little bit more fun.
Surprised the original didn't get one. The original Welcome to the Jungle. How would you call that?
The original Jumanji reboot.
But is it a reboot because it's a video game?
It actually is a sequel.
It's a sequel. Yeah, because they
turned into a video game.
Yeah, that's right. Because
Well, whatever it is, I'm surprised it didn't get a video game tie-in.
So just like
did you?
Wait, can we talk about the hunter now?
Yes.
Let's go back and talk about the hunter.
The hunter is like absolutely terrifying in this movie.
He's also very entertaining.
He's like the Terminator. He can't be killed by anything. So yeah, but there's a joke here. Sorry, do you want to get into that?
Yeah, they deliver the line. He goes in to buy a weapon. And they ask for license, registration, background check, and he just drops a massive pile of gold. And then the guy says, well, you're not a postal worker, are you?
Do you guys get that? Do you understand that?
Yeah.
It's like a joke about a mass shooting in a children's movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was the same time, it's right around the same time that the movie Postal and all that other stuff came out.
But it's like, kind of
give me a little edgy in your family-friendly movie. That's fine.
I mean, it's family. It's also about, you know, a guy who misses, you know, the death of his parents and misses his entire life for 26 years. It's already pretty dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's darker than the day with him.
Yeah. That's a fact. So anything else about
it? Yeah, these slight problems aside, this was very enjoyable upon rewatching. Not a board game I'd play. Like Roland Moves, there's not a ton to say about it. So
I was actually surprised at how well it held up in the graphics and everything. Like, it's not amazing, but it actually is not that bad.
You're really CGI?
Yeah, all of that. I mean, with the insects and alligator. It was actually relatively pretty well done.
So if you remember from your childhood, check it out and let us know what you think.
What was your favorite quote from the game, Andrew?
Oh, right. My favorite part, they have the other little girl who they have to convince to play the rest of the game with them, and she has a bit of psychotic break in the middle of it because she's had to live her life in the real world with everyone telling her that she survived a traumatic murder and she's having a very hard time playing, but they go to her, look, we know you're having a bad time, but I really think we should finish this game.
But it's really your turn. Can you just roll the dice?
Can you handle it?
I'm sure we've all been there. Can you just, I know you have to pee, but really just do your, finish your turn, please.
I think we've all been there. Okay. So those were two classic board game movies, but unfortunately, from here on out, it is all downhill as we get into the 21st century board game movies. And here's our first one.
How dare you? I disagree.
But that's fine. You can disagree. Dungeons and Dragons. I understand it's technically not a board game movie because technically Dungeons and Dragons is not a board game, but it's close enough if you ask us. And as much fun as it is to dump on this movie, and it is fun, we don't think it's that bad. I think it actually has some good redeeming qualities. I would wager our panelists and our audience would agree. So there's a lot to like here. The beginning has a real sense of fun. Damon Wayans has some pretty funny lines as the comic relief, and of course it has dungeons as well as dragons, which you need. They make a lot of references to the game, so maybe too many references, and they kind of get shoehorned in. Like, for example, there's a quote that says, I know you mages are renowned for your high intelligence. We should also add that it's based on Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, which was the only thing that was available at the time, or was the most recent, I should say, at the time. Advanced D&D, D&D 2nd Edition. So instead of wizards, there are mages. Instead of rogues, there are thieves. And instead of clerics, there are priests. And most importantly, it has, next slide, Jeremy Irons as the big bad guy, Profion.
Don't you mean Ibuprofion?
Don't laugh at that.
You can boo her.
So if you look on YouTube, you should check out this one scene where as he chews the scenery like nobody's business, he finally has control over the all-powerful MacGuffin known as the Rod of Severrul. So while researching this, I watched a behind-the-scenes shot where they had Gary Gygax, the creator of D&D, as an extra. So Jeremy Irons is going, he's yelling, he's raging, blah, 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 blah. And the old cut, he immediately drops his arms and just walks off.
Jeremy Irons did.
Yeah.
Not Gary Gygax.
Yeah, Gary Gygax just stood there watching him.
Yeah, but his face just drops.
He's done.
He's totally done with it.
I'm going back to Disney and being a lion again.
Yeah.
So he's the major character, but then we also have, next slide, Tom Baker. For you classic Doctor Who fans, Tom Baker played the fourth Doctor, the most popular Doctor, the one with the scarf. So he makes a cameo appearance as a priest and an elf. So you can check that out. So. What? According to the first time director of D&D named Courtney Solomon, it's very important that they get iconic D&D monsters in the movie. And the behind-the-scenes footage kind of gave you the impression that this was given a higher priority than things like likable characters or good story. So, next slide, please. We have a beholder, one of the most iconic D&D monsters ever, and it's serving as a role as a guard dog for the bad guys. This also gives you an indication of the PS2-level cutscene, or kind of special effects, that they had going for them back in the turn of the century.
The beholder totally blew my mind when it came on. I was like, there's no way they would have a beholder in this movie. What a classic D&D monster.
So, well, actually, speaking of monsters, you can hit the next slide, please. So there we have our dragons. You can tell the movie was very influenced by Star Wars. The filmmakers basically admitted as much on camera. And the end of the movie is a climactic battle between two groups of dragons. The gold dragons were the good ones, and the red dragons were the evil ones.
And apparently this is the best they could do, even though they tried really hard. This is how the dragons look in a close-up shot. 2000.
Yeah, that face.
All right, next slide. So while the dragons fight, our hero, played by the kid who was Jimmy Olsen in Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. Yeah. He has a sword fight versus Damodar, which is like the Darth Vader type guy. And if it looks like Star Wars, it's because it's supposed to. Next slide, please. So unfortunately, even though The Phantom Menace came out only a year before Dungeons & Dragons, it seems to sequel from prequelitis anyway. So in this scene, which feels like it goes on for a goddamn eternity, Profion argues with the ruling council of the Empire of something or other about, like, politics. And it looks like the Galactic Senate from The Phantom Menace. And some of the humor is kind of dated as well. So for example, the female mage lead meets her two heroes trying to rob the magic school. And yes, that's what it's called, the magic school. She entangles them in a magical rope and says, "That'll stop you from getting away," to which Marlon Wayans responds, next slide, "Yeah, that's probably the only way she can get guys to come home with her."
Yeah. This part's unbelievable. Speaking of, it's almost like Clue and like this dated sexist humor coming back. It's like, this powerful mage just caught you. Yeah, let's get back at her. You know, the only thing of value is her relationships with men.
But like, that's what D&D is all about, though, is just characters taking shots at each other, literally and figuratively, all the time, even when they're supposed to be good friends.
I mean, not when I play D&D.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, maybe you guys play D&D differently from what I do, so.
Well, you play me in my D&D game, and that's not what happens in your game.
I think you're remembering it differently than I am, but that's fine. So the best part of the movie is banter like this, even when it's on. I don't know about you all. So not only is it like sexist, but we also have the fantasy races clashing against each other, elf versus dwarf, and dwarf versus human, and so on. So for example, they meet a dwarf barbarian who can barely communicate, and this is what she says to him. "Can't you rise above being a dwarf?" Very uncalled for.
So insensitive.
To be fair, all he wanted to do was eat and drink.
Oh. Yeah, as long as we're talking about the mage, she was very strict and only could cast spells when she used spell components, which, whenever I play D&D, nobody ever pays attention to that.
Pay attention, that's going to start happening.
Well, so this is sort of something that bothered me about the movie, was that D&D is truly a team experience. Everyone is working together, but in the D&D movie, it's more like Star Wars, where you have your main character, your straight white male with brown hair, who does all the, like, most of the cool stuff. Then you have the sidekick, comic relief, you have the love interest, and then you have, like, these other people, like the dwarf, who, like, are barely even characters. They're just sort of there. So I thought that was pretty disappointing. So we have one last line of dialogue, which I still can't tell whether it's a joke or not. Someone says to Ridley, "Just like you thieves, always taking things that don't belong to you." I can't tell whether it's supposed to be funny or not.
Or just bad writing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, all right, any concluding thoughts about the D&D movie?
The other thing I thought was interesting, which happens in many D&D campaigns, is they constantly split the party, right? So it's constantly Ridley and the mage, mm-hmm. and then it's the dwarf, and Damon Wayans, who's a thief.
He's a humorous thief. Yeah.
He's a,
I thought he was going to be an elf because he wears this hat that covers his ears. So that was going to be like Spock and Voyage Home, but it wasn't. He was just human.
But to be fair, he then tries to get with the elf. So.
Oh, I forgot about her.
Yeah, she shows up for a hot minute and she's just there.
See,
yeah.
That's what I mean by like characters that are like barely even characters.
Yeah, and then she's just like, "I'm here, I'm helping."
Have you guys all seen this movie? Do you know what we're talking about? So if you haven't seen it in a while, you probably want to check it out. If you're into Dungeons and Dragons, I feel like you must watch.
Is there a reason his ears are so red?
Oh, yeah. So at some point he gets punished for failing, and he has implanted into his head a creature that can read minds, so it shoots out of his ears and then sucks the information out of someone else's ears, so it's slowly like corrupting him. So as he goes on, his neck starts to grow, get a little veinier and a little redder, and his head turns redder and redder, and you see more and more veins pop out. But then his ears, between this scene and the prior scene, it goes from like normal color, like red and red, but then his ears just are bright red and everything else is normal. And you're like, what just happened?
There's a lot of crazy stuff that we left out of this panel. We have to cut it for time.
Yeah, and I didn't understand the blue lipstick. He just constantly...
It's silver.
Is it silver?
It's silver, yeah. Oh, but it's definitely very strange. Like well, maybe it's like a bluish silver.
They just don't explain it.
Yeah. It's like, it's an alien race where the only thing... Or, not alien. You know, a fantasy race where they have blue lips, but it's not explained.
And Jeremy Lyons loves Kate.
Dermax.
He looks so good in capes. Like he's
anybody coming. Watching Watchmen?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, capes. Yeah, he's good though. And in this movie, he has multiple wonderful capes. It's
no
capes.
This is German capes.
No capes. Let's move on.
Next and best movie of the 2000s. So I thought a decent amount about Battleship for this panel. It's obviously not good. I mean, look at that tomato meter. But I think that they could have done a pretty good job with this movie. And I also think that it definitely benefited from the Battleship branding, because without it, there'd be like nothing interesting in it. And it had some unintentional comedy. So I'm sure we're all pretty nostalgic for Battleship. It's actually been around since 1931. And we had that Star Wars version, which was cutting edge and made a lot of like battle sounds when you played Battleship, which was awesome.
Yeah, like sound effects and like blaster fire.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so if you haven't seen the movie, which you shouldn't have because it was bad, but the brief synopsis is that scientists send like a radio signal into space and it annoys an alien planet. So they send bad guys or, you know, attack ships to Earth. They're mostly these like spinning wheels, and they attack Hawaii. And the humans eventually defeat the aliens in the original USS Missouri, which is crewed by actual World War II veterans. It's probably the first actual feature-length commercial for the US Navy, and definitely the most creative. So Taylor Kitsch, who plays the lead, ends up with a girl, and Liam Neeson finally comes back, and everything's fine except for Alexander Skarsgård, who died.
As he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, any thoughts about that?
No. Oh. Sorry, I hit the button by mistake.
So the thing about the movie starts off like Clue, where it starts as a comedy, and Taylor Kitsch breaks into this
he breaks into a gas station to steal a burrito.
Yeah, no, it's to impress the girl.
Yeah.
And he like falls on his face and he like gets arrested. And it's all funny, but then that stops like halfway through and it just becomes the serious like Michael Bay style
war movie.
Yeah, war movie.
Yeah.
And they don't even use a battleship until the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
It's a legit battleship though.
Oh, we'll get that.
Despite the poor reviews, the opening credits kind of really impressed me because Hasbro had its own studio credit, and I was like, oh, they're going to be like, they're really into this, you know, they made their own studio, you know, but of course the movie's super generic and the plot is totally second to all the special effects, but I will say that the best parts of the movie are inspired by the game, Exhibit A, is the pegs. So the alien ships launch missiles that look exactly like the battleship pegs, except without the awesome red colors.
Yeah.
But
don't worry, they glow red right before they blow up.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's perfect. Right. I forgot about that.
So in the next slide, that's how they look when they're about to get launched. And then in the next slide, they embed the smaller area inside the ship and they, you know, kind of burrow deep and then they explode.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nobody says that. I know.
So I love the pegs. I thought they were brilliant. Anything else with them?
No.
Okay, they were great.
I like the pegs too.
Yeah. Next.
I did not harp on the pegs.
Okay.
They also had a very thrilling scene that's almost exactly like playing Battleship with your friends. So in this scene, the Japanese commander has to set up a primitive radar system to target the vessels while the American crew members call it miss or hit accordingly. And it's a pretty good recreation of just missing your opponent's ship. Though, of course, in the game, your opponent's ship can't move. So,
unless you're playing against my family. I swear my sister moved those ships every time.
So their explanation for why that they have to do this is because it's sort of like the original Battlestar Galactica or the remake of Battlestar Galactica or Pacific Rim, where the aliens have like this advanced tech that can take out computers,
right,
but not old computers.
It's not quite computers, it's buoys in the water, which the ripples of the waves created by it would activate and send a little sensor and be like, bing, bing, fire at that one.
They really tried, and we appreciate that.
And finally, the USS Missouri itself. So, the battleship was worth waiting for. The USS Missouri was commissioned in 1944. It was the last battleship commissioned by the Navy, and is best remembered as the site of the surrender of the Empire of Japan. They actually used the real USS Missouri for one day in 2010 for filming purposes. And so, as awesome as it is, they probably could have used it a little bit more since it was called Battleship. So I think if Universal and Hasbro had just put like a little bit more effort into making Taylor Kitsch likable and like having a little bit more plot, they could have had a pretty awesome recreation of the Battleship game and made money. Just follow Clue's example.
I don't know. I don't think I agree.
No?
I don't think anything could have saved this movie. So I recommend Dungeons and Dragons. I don't recommend Battleship.
Yeah. Although I did like Jesse Plemons in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, and also people like to trash Rihanna in this movie.
She's fine.
She's fine.
She's totally fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not the worst part by a long time.
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't watched it and you do choose to watch it, I recommend playing Battle Shots beforehand. And have a couple of.
Well, my advice is if you want to watch it or play Battleship, just open your computer and play World of Warships.
That was an original Tuesday night game. Yeah. Tuesday Night Gaming game before we started podcasting, and they're not paying us to say that, so
no.
You know it's a good recommendation.
And it's free to play anyway.
Next up. Okay, so we combed the internet for rumors about upcoming board game movies. Take everything you see following with a grain of salt.
We're not insiders.
Asterisks all around.
Yes. But feel free to report on the internet.
We spend a lot of time on Reddit, so.
Yeah. Feel free to post it on Facebook and see what kind of reaction I get.
If it's on the internet, it's true and it's going to happen, right? So just post it.
Alright. So first we have Monopoly starring Kevin Hart. The rumor is that the director of Ride Along, if you guys remember that movie, is going to direct it. And then Allspark Productions, who made Battleship, are going to be involved. So we have...
Is that Michael Bay's company?
Hasbro. It's still
Hasbro. Transformers, right? Allspark? So, what if this movie, though, was like a cutthroat, like Wall Street, like Wolf of Wall Street? Not like Wolf of Wall Street, but like something like that.
Like Wall Street.
Like Wall Street. Yeah, the Charlie Sheen.
Just drop the wolf part.
Yeah.
That's
just
everyone
like
who
that.
Wants to own Boardwalk. I'm sorry. That's not going to happen.
So, I don't know, I feel like it's pretty clearly going to be a comedy because we got Kevin Hart in it, and I just put in a picture of Kevin Hart looking confused because I'm confused about why you would make a Monopoly movie. I think he probably is too.
I mean, there's still luxury tax, I mean, we can all relate, right?
Hopefully the point will be a title that broken capital.
I don't know if we're going to get that message from Monopoly movie.
I mean, it's a serious topic for a comedy, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really can't even imagine what a Monopoly movie would be if it's not like Wall Street.
Right.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart just wants to own the boardwalk. He loved it when he was a kid. So
that's
to
true.
Everything else, buying it up to get there.
Half of the movie is him just playing skee ball.
Yeah. Come up by train from the Atlantic City area. The prices have dropped back down a lot there. Cheap real estate.
There you go.
No one else
has been attached to this.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows any of
it. I just want him to have the cane and the mustache, and he just orders people to buy stuff.
Is he playing the thimble?
Yeah.
He wants to play.
He's in the race car.
Or he's just doing chance cards. He's just like, this is you. Oh, it could be a tie-in to. Being in jail. So what's the movie with Will Ferrell?
Oh,
Get Hard. Get Hard. It's a tie-in.
All right. What's up? Okay, let's go. Oh, wow.
This is all just, okay, that's also, that's a photoshopped
This is like a hard rumor, like not at all confirmed.
You can't make it better, don't lie.
No, exactly. No, I wish I had posted it, but there was another pit photo where the original shot that I had of the cast, like, all lined up, they all just put Ryan Reynolds on all of them, which I would actually pay if that was the case.
Another D&D reboot.
So it seems there's actually been more Dungeons and Dragons movies since the one that we talked about, the usually Sci-Fi Channel original movies. This one seems to have a little bit more legs to it. So I looked up Michael Giglio, however you say it, the scriptwriter, and he's never written a script as far as I can tell on his IMDb page, but he did produce a lot of movies like Avengers Endgame, so that's something. I still think Dungeons and Dragons has a lot of potential as a movie.
I'd probably do a more of a series than.
I mean, I really like Reign of Fire.
Surprisingly, okay. This is a hard rumor too. I don't really. That IMDb plot summary I think is total BS. Don't listen to any of that. But so if you guys have ever seen the series The Pillars of the Earth or read the book. I feel like Settlers of Catan could be kind of similar to that.
Yeah.
Oh, glad you like it.
Oh, so, this is really happening.
Yeah, this is true. I'm excited about this.
I've never played Magic, but I would watch this show.
Yeah.
The Planeswalkers, I believe, are going to be the characters. Mm-hmm. And Allspark Animation makes a reappearance, so they're going to be involved somehow. But,
exactly.
So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited for this one.
And this is like, I don't even know. This is like just people talking about it.
I was imagining Hungry Hungry Hippos was like a horror movie about like hippos attacking. Yeah.
All the people involved are little white marble people. Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of surprised they haven't made a Candyland movie already.
Like an animated one?
Sure. Well, because most of these board games don't have built-in characters. Clue does, which is why it was successful, I think. But Candyland also does. So, you know, why hasn't it happened already?
Or why hasn't Tim Burton gotten his hands on it yet?
Oh, God. Say that.
Well, then you know who's going to be cast, right? So.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
So, finally, we have some board game movies ideas for you. All
right.
And when we're done, you can maybe tell us yours. So, we looked through the board games that we liked and tried to think of what could work as Hollywood movies. So, here we go. So first we have mine, Blood Bowl, aka the original fantasy football. The elevator pitch is, it's Lord of the Rings meets Remember the Titans meets Dodgeball, a true underdog story. So for those of you who have never played Blood Bowl, it's a derivative of Warhammer, but instead of these fantasy races fighting each other, they play American football. And there's lots of violence and lots of touchdowns, and it's a great time. So my pitch is that we have an underdog human team. It's been 500 years since the humans have ever won the Blood Bowl because they're not as strong as orcs, they're not as fast as halflings, they're not as dexterous as elves. But Griff Overwald and Jacob von Altdorf put the band together like the Bad News Bears or whatever, and they get on the way. But on the other hand, I also see it as Warcraft the Movie 2.0. Yeah. And it's not a very well-known brand like some of the other ones.
Remake
of Space
Jam. Yeah. but it's like different enough that it could like still work.
Or Rollerball.
That one's mine.
I think it's great. I would watch it.
Next up?
Let's make it.
I think it'd be fun if they made a Spirit Island movie. I'm sort of picturing an animated feature where you have those cartoonishly evil colonists from Pocahontas, and then like maybe those like the Titans from Hercules, like as like spirit who heals with water, those crazy names that they have for them. And especially if they can get that feeling of just colonists being ants and coming out of nowhere and then getting to watch these elementals go crazy. Alternatively, they could make them cute and marketable and make a lot of money off the elementals like Frozen 2 decided to do. So maybe somewhere between there. But Disney, give me a call. Make this happen.
So my idea was Roots, which I played a few times. But I was imagining it's like a Redwall meets War of the Roses / Game of Thrones, where it's like a really cute political thriller. Kind of like, it would be animated, of course, because that would be the best way. And I had some made up casting here. I love Clancy Brown, so he would be the bird leader. Just the interactions between players and that.
And the art style in that game is just so spot on. Mm-hmm. It really makes the experience. I want to see those things animated more than just their little Kickstarter trailers that they do.
So I've also thought you could do it as more like a serious animated movie, sort of like,
Sausage Party?
No. Yes. Like Watership Down, or like Waltz with Bashir, or like Persepolis, or like.
Oh, this. Or like Grave of the Fireflies.
So you guys know how Root is like a metaphor for the Iraq War? Are you familiar with this? So the designer made a movie that's like the Iraq War, and then they couldn't get permission to publish it because it was too controversial. So he just changed everybody to animals, and then it got published under that. So your movie could kind of. It's like an extended metaphor. They love that stuff.
Right.
And if it wasn't animated, I was thinking I would like Sonic Fox to be one of the guys. Mm-hmm. Just because he's a big furry.
Sonic Fox?
He's a fighting game
player.
Okay. Yeah,
he's a
real
person. Yeah,
he's not that animated. Like I said, a real live version of it. I would like to see Sonic Fox because I think he does really good things for the gaming society. I mean, he's openly gay, he is a furry, and like he's won tons of awards, and like I think he could open up gaming a whole different capacity.
Sure.
What's that?
So far not an asshole.
So far
not an asshole. Alright.
So we also came up with just like movies and games where the game's not based on the movie, but it like kind of is too.
I think it seems like cheese and wine pairings for your board game night.
So like video games are like, so video games are becoming more like movies, and movies are becoming more like video games, where the idea is that a video game is like you simulate an action movie. Board games do that too.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah. I thought Formula One or Formula D was very similar to. You could kind of say that Senna, but that's based off of like
it's a documentary.
Sylvester Stallone's movie.
Over the Top.
No, where he's a Formula One driver.
Drive.
Thank you. Yeah,
that's really what it's called.
Yeah,
it's
like, okay. And basically they were driving. Like there's a scene where it's him and another guy were driving through the city in Formula One cars, like dodging each other and stuff. So I thought that could be flushed out into a Formula One D or a Formula D movie.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it from us. In the remaining 8 minutes, I'm sure you guys have things you want to talk about, if you'd like. We don't have to.
Any ideas for board game movies?
Wait.
Yeah. Oh, he's so excited about the podium and the microphone, so.
Yeah, bring it up. So, don't break the ice. A cautionary climate change tale.
Oh. With the little penguin.
Yeah. So I was also thinking of like
happy
life,
feet movie.
Like the various things you can fall into. Like, oh, I'm a doctor. Oh, I'm no longer a doctor. Now I'm just.
Yeah, like Game of Life is like a Black Mirror episode where everything is like plastic and has this like unsettling undertone to it.
No, I just want to go from being a doctor to just being a mime. Like making tons of money instead of
nothing. I like how the worst thing that can happen is you end up in the poorhouse in Game of Thrones.
But it's still a nice house, dude. You have retirement.
Yeah.
You still have retirement. Please.
So before the panel started, we were actually discussing this.
Nice.
And we thought of some few good ones, like Operation with starring The Rock.
Wow.
Candyland is just a terrifying horror Lynchian monstrosity. And Perfection as like a Saw-esque like movie.
Perfection.
Perfection. We had to put the pieces into the slot
to
make the right
choice. Yeah, you gotta match the
smell.
You never played that when you were a kid?
No.
Oh,
that's sad.
Right.
Wow.
All right, we're gonna
my
go to the classic war
so
game area
easy,
and hope they have it.
Three pieces. I won all the time. It was great.
All right. Anyone else want to hand off the microphone? You guys are all trustworthy with that microphone. Sure.
I've spent more time than I should probably think about a D&D movie.
Okay.
And I guess the way they have, like, obviously want to go with it is to do like a franchise thing where they take the story very seriously. In that case, I think they should like look to things like Baldur's Gate or like those franchises that, you know, they have a lot of character. But I'd also want them to do something like how me and my group usually play, where the players don't necessarily take the story as seriously as the story wants them to.
Yeah.
And that way, that regard, you could have like a Ghostbusters type scenario where Dan Aykroyd's the only person who really cares. Everyone else is just kind of like having their own fun. But then there's also like the way you could do it as like a Lego movie type scenario where like you are watching a very straightforward fantasy story, except you notice these characters just acting just a little bit off. Until like finally towards the end of the movie, like, you know, the big climax and emotional climax occurs, and you just pull out to see these guys sitting in their basement while, you know, they're fighting this big dragon, and like, you know, it's more about their own personal issues than it is whatever the world they're saving is.
So it could be like a tie into Stranger Things.
I love it, first of all. But the beginning, what's up?
I was gonna say the Baldur's Gate version starring Drizzt.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
oh,
there will be the breakout character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The beginning, that's what the D&D movie is in the beginning, where it's like all real lighthearted, but then eventually it gets serious. It's not so fun. All right. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Back there?
Along the lines of that, I'm pretty excited for the upcoming Critical Role animated series that's coming out.
Yeah.
Mostly just to see the test case of somebody's campaign then adapted into something that's scripted and produced.
Japanese anime.
Yeah.
And Record of Brothers War, where they took their original campaign and made it into.
Oh, that's right.
I know what I'll look into next. Thank you. That's
right.
Awesome.
What's up?
In the realm of things that won't happen, because the whole problem with the Mastermind horror movies that makes your game like look scary, I think that Risk would actually make a decent horror, you know, type scenario where it's just like some blatantly evil person called Lou Cipher or something comes along with six kids.
I like the
name. You know, he's just like, hey kids, want to play a game? You get to rule the world and, you know, divvy up the cards and just like, congratulations, you've mind controlled everybody in France and now tell them to go kill, you know, everybody over in Eastern Europe and invade Greenland or something, you know. And you have one character who, you know, doesn't join in the game and is like the only one sane person who's like trying to convince their friends not to have a pointless global conflict over, you know, Indonesia or whatever.
That's like a super gritty war movie. All right,
that's pretty good.
I was wondering if this ever happened to you guys, where you're sitting with your eyes half closed, trying to find something to watch, and then you find a title, and it's like a board game title. My favorite game is Medici, and I see a show called Medici, and I'm like, huh. And then you put it on, and it's like, what the hell is this? It's nothing like the game.
Yeah, you're just scrolling, or it's recommended. You're like, okay, sure. Oh, God, what did I get into today? Yeah.
Especially since there are more games come out every year with all these names, and you never know what might retroactively happen.
Wait.
I want to see a Munchkins movie.
give them time.
And I think Munchkins would be really good. I think it'd be like Clue meets D&D just on screen, and I think that'd be great.
Just constantly swapping out large for small items.
Yeah.
Going into dungeons and then having to fail. It'd be
great too, the interaction of like the castmates screwing each other over so that they can progress too. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
It's like a horror movie when you get trapped and you can never leave.
We also mentioned the Lego movie earlier, and like over the course of those, how like you see characters from all these different franchises that the Lego people have. Like Munchkin's got those rights too. You can have anything appear in that movie.
Mm.
All right,
last one.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here.
This isn't actually an idea. This is something I heard about.
Okay.
The H.P. Lovecraft film festival, I think it is, in Portland, Oregon. Every year they have a new film. And one of them recently was, I can't remember the title, but it was straight up a Call of Cthulhu RPG adventure.
Oh, I don't remember that. I remember hearing about that, but I don't recall the details. Yeah.
And but it stars this guy who's obviously like this hardboiled detective who has dealt with the mythos before, and it does have, on its budget, it has an action set piece involving a shaga.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for coming.
So that is our time. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Have
a
great
time. Check us out, Susan and Jamie. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, everyone. Good. Everything worked perfectly.
Even ended up using that wireless mic.
Oh, I know. I can trip or something.
See, I would break it.
No, it's in the back. Oh, great. Yeah, she has it back there. Can you pass it in my bag?
Yeah, you can put it in.